Hi, I'm Stephanie Kelton.
And I'm Jeremy Olshan. We're the hosts of the new podcast from MarketWatch, The Best New Ideas in Money.
The pandemic showed many of us that it's possible to work from home, but that's not the only change the workforce has seen.
This week, we're looking at companies who are experimenting with the four-day work week and how it could massively change how we live and work.
Listen to The Best New Ideas in Money, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is your tech news briefing for Wednesday, February 9th. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. The biggest semiconductor deal ever has been called off. Japan's SoftBank had planned to sell chip design specialist Arm to U.S. chipmaker NVIDIA for upwards of $40 billion. But yesterday, the company said they were scrapping the plans. On today's show, our Heard on the Street tech columnist Dan Gallagher will be here to discuss why the deal fell through and what comes next for some of the world's most important chip companies. That's after these headlines. The CEO of Peloton is stepping down. John Foley, the fitness company's co-founder, will instead become executive chairman. Peloton also says it plans to cut 1 in 5 of its corporate positions, roughly 2,800 jobs, but keep its instructors and content the same. The move comes amid a slowdown in sales for the company's connected fitness equipment and a tumbling stock price. Foley's replacement is Barry McCarthy, a choice that our M&A reporter Cara Lombardo says should help reassure investors as Peloton, once a pandemic darling, transitions to its next phase.
Barry is a well-known and widely liked Silicon Valley executive. He was the CFO at the streaming service Spotify, before that at Netflix. So these are major positions he had. And his specialty is subscription businesses, which will obviously come in handy at Peloton, which, you know, has a subscription model for its classes and its content. And one of the lessons I think Peloton has learned in the past year or two is that there's much more money to be made in subscriptions than in the equipment itself. So I think that's part of the rationale for bringing Barry on.
On Tuesday, Peloton reported a $439 million net loss in its latest quarter and lowered its revenue forecast for its full fiscal year. You can hear more on this on yesterday's PM edition of our sister podcast, What's News. Meta is once again threatening to shut down Facebook and Instagram in Europe if it can't keep transferring user data back to the U.S. European regulators are drawing up new rules for how EU citizens' data can be transferred out of the bloc. In the meantime, Meta said a 2020 preliminary order from Ireland's Data Protection Commission could prevent the company from using the system it currently has in place. Our European tech reporter Sam Schechner says if Meta does pull its platforms from the EU, it could come at a significant cost.
This order, should it be finalized, could force it to stop operating some of its services, such as Facebook or Instagram in Europe. It's an open question whether that would really happen, however. The company earns about a quarter of its revenue from Europe, so it would be a pretty big hit, and there'd be an incentive to figure out how to silo the data affected by such an order in Europe.
A final decision from Ireland's regulators is expected in the first half of this year, and it would also be subject to court appeals. And maybe you've had a picture from a vacation or a special occasion ruined by a photobomber. Well, now astronomers pointing their telescopes up at the heavens are running into the same problem with satellites. Companies like SpaceX are sending up a lot more satellites, and that's making space a whole lot more crowded. While businesses like SpaceX are taking steps to reduce the perceived brightness of their satellites, our science reporter Eileen Woodward says the photobombing is likely to continue and even increase.
So the chance of a Starlink satellite streak sort of occurring at that very point in an image where that's exactly where the astronomers want to look and the object that the astronomers want to see is, that's like less than 1%. However, the problem is that we're at 1,500 Starlink satellites right now, and we're going to increase that, you know, almost by an order of magnitude to about 12,000. And when that happens, you know, the problem might get a little bit more tricky.
All right, coming up, one of the world's biggest semiconductor companies was willing to pay an arm and a leg for this chip designer. So why did the deal fall through? We'll discuss after the break.
What happens when businesses make unlocking the power of their data an organizational and cultural imperative? Find out in the Data Agenda, a new podcast series from Wall Street Journal Custom Content and Amazon Web Services, available on Spotify and Apple Podcasts.
There was big news in the semiconductor industry on Tuesday. The blockbuster sale of one of the world's most important behind-the-scenes semiconductor businesses, UK-based chip designer Arm, was called off. The Japanese investor SoftBank had hoped to sell Arm, a specialist in creating designs for chips used by companies like Apple and Qualcomm, to Nvidia, the largest U.S. semiconductor maker by market value. WSJ Heard on the Street tech columnist Dan Gallagher has been following the developments and looking at what this could mean for the businesses and the wider chip industry. And he joins me now. Thanks for being here, Dan.
Good to be here.
So, Dan, the company said they scrapped this deal because of regulatory challenges. Can you just expand on that? What were the regulatory concerns here?
There's regulatory concerns now on almost any big tech merger that goes on. This one was even more complicated because this is involving, SoftBank is a Japanese company. Arm is a UK-based company. NVIDIA is American-based. And right now in this kind of geopolitical environment, I think chips have become the most politicized industry. Every region, every country kind of has their own nationalistic interest to kind of protect their base. So that adds to a lot of the complexity. In the case of this one, it looks like the biggest resistance was actually from UK regulators where, they didn't like the idea of, an American company taking over what's really considered one of their crown tech jewels over there at Arm. So that caused a lot of concern for them. On top of the fact that there was, I think it was really unlikely China was going to approve this too. There was a lot of resistance over there as well. So I think that just became more clear as this kept going on.
Right. And so Arm in particular, it's different from other semiconductor companies. Can you explain exactly what it does and why it stands out in this industry?
Yeah. Arm is essentially a licensing business. They do basic chip designs and their specialty is the types of chips that consume less power. If you compare the chip that's in your PC, like the main chip that, that companies like Intel and AMD make, those are a type of chip that their performance is strong, but they draw more power. Arm's chips were originally good for mobile devices because they drew less power. Their designs were a little more optimized for that kind of thing. So phones, tablets, those sorts of devices. And the growth prospects for those are enormous because more chips are going into more devices, more mobile devices and everything. And so many of those are using Arm's designs. And what happens is companies like Apple, Qualcomm, will license designs from Arm and then design their own chips with those basic designs. And then they were paying a licensing fee to Arm for that. So Arm is not really a chip maker, not a chip manufacturer, but they do a lot of the basic blueprint work that really is in just so many devices that we use right now.
Yeah, I've seen Arm sometimes described as the Switzerland of chip making.
I think that's actually a good example because they have to deal with everybody. And, so many people now have like key chips based on those designs. And I think that's also made this deal kind of problematic from the start anyway, because NVIDIA is also a chip company. NVIDIA competes with, Intel, AMD, Qualcomm, all types of companies in various aspects. And so for a lot of these other companies, the prospect of NVIDIA owning the Switzerland, as you put it, wasn't a great scenario for them.
So why did NVIDIA want Arm in the first place? What was its goal?
Well, I think for NVIDIA, there was a few reasons. One is that, NVIDIA sees itself as more than just a chip company. They see themselves as a company that's building a big library of designs and the type of software that's needed to make chips operate that's a lot more expansive than just the chips that NVIDIA ships itself and makes itself. So I think for NVIDIA, they saw the possibility that they could combine what they have with Arm and make kind of almost a super licensing type business that would really make a lot of difference, especially as more chips go into more things like cars. And now we're talking about the stuff about the metaverse, all these kind of future opportunities that are still pretty chip dependent. I think NVIDIA saw a big opportunity there, but frankly, it was also a very opportunistic thing because NVIDIA had a relationship with SoftBank. SoftBank needed to kind of, for its own reasons, unwind its Arm deal. And NVIDIA was kind of in a position to get a really good business at, quite frankly, was a pretty good price just because of all those dynamics.
So Dan, what should we expect from NVIDIA now that this deal has been scuppered?
NVIDIA is going to keep doing what they've been doing, and they've been doing it very well. In fact, most people on Wall Street didn't think the deal would ultimately get cleared. NVIDIA's business is doing, you know, I mean, their basic graphics chips business that are into like gaming PCs and go into data centers is doing phenomenally well. And then you add in kind of these future opportunities we've talked about, cars, metaverse, which NVIDIA likes to call Omniverse, but it's a similar component, similar variation. They've got tons of potential. Like losing ARM is not going to hurt them. They've got a lot of growth potential without it. For them, ARM was nice to have. It was not have to have.
What about ARM? I mean, what does SoftBank do with the company now?
Well, they're going to take them public, try to get them out on an IPO. ARM was a public company before SoftBank bought them in 2016. So it essentially gets ARM back to where it was. It's not a bad time, you know, frankly. I mean, even though it wasn't their first choice, the public market for chip companies right now is strong. You know, you have dynamics like the shortage that have reminded people how key and valuable semiconductors are. So chip stocks have been a very strong performer over the last 12 months, 3 years, 5 years, if you chart it out. It's been a great sector. The valuations are pretty high right now. So in that sense, the market's not bad for this kind of thing to go out.
All right. That was our Heard on the Street tech columnist, Dan Gallagher. Thanks for joining us, Dan.
Thank you for having me.
And that's it for today's tech news briefing. If you want more tech stories, check out our website, wsj.com. And if you like our show, please rate and review it. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
Adoption of teens from foster care is a topic not enough people know about, and we're here to change that. I'm April Dinwiddie, host of the new podcast, Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Each episode brings you compelling real-life adoption stories told by the families that live them with commentary from experts. Visit adoptuskids.org/podcast or subscribe to Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Administration for Children and Families and the Ad Council.